Welcome to Recover Strong, a show that will transform your recovery from an eating disorder by helping you go from theory to practice to mastery. I'm Jessica Flint, founder of Recovery Warriors, and you are listening to our podcast channel created specifically for you in all the stages and phases of recovery. I want to celebrate you for carving out this special time to learn new skills, tools, and get the inspiration you need to recover strong. Let's get started.
I'm your host, Andrea Wells. And just like you, I understand what it's like to live with an eating disorder and be held back by body image struggles. The recovery journey is ongoing, and we're all in it together as we learn to embrace new behaviors and new thoughts day by day. Join me as I connect with eating disorder experts and thought leaders to give you the tools, resources, and strategies you need to recover strong. Today, I am joined by eating disorder physician and advocate, Dr. Chucks. He recently released the book, Eating Disorders Don't Discriminate, and he is working to platform diverse voices to help make positive changes in the recovery landscape. Dr. Chucks recently joined us on a previous episode of Recover Strong, and he is back to answer a burning recovery question from our audience of warriors. Today's question comes from a member of our Courage Club, Taylor, and Taylor asks, quote, I fluctuate between different eating disorder behaviors, and as a result, my weight fluctuates too. When my body is smaller, I get compliments. When it gets bigger, I get comments of criticism or concern. I used to live for the compliments, but at this point, I find all comments on my body size to be upsetting and bring up deep feelings of shame. How can I tell people to not comment on my weight changes? End quote. Taylor, what are your thoughts on that, Dr. Chucks?
So, firstly, one of my mentors used to say, you can't go swimming and not get wet. You know, you can't live in a society that this is pumped and pumped and pumped and pumped and it not rub off on you at some stage. Ultimately, we are very much influenced by what people think of us. We're very much influenced by, in this case, the person was referring to comments on their body, but they now are insightful to the point where they don't want these and they're actually saying, how can I tell people to please stop making comments? Unfortunately, people probably won't stop making comments. This is one of those really unfortunate situations where maybe those near and dear, you know, family, friends, people that know you well, but you will get people in the workplace, you'll get people passing by on the street. Again, we're all swimming in this society where people have a stereotype of bodies, and you know we've talked about this before, the important, you know, how, you know, from even policy level, you know, people are you know, campaigns, adverts, all these different things are being pushed, and so unfortunately I don't think those comments will ever stop in their entirety. They may reduce, I think. So interestingly, in the book that we just wrote, Eating Disorders Don't Discriminate, one of the writers in the book, Emmy, she's the first ever larger bodied and full-bodied model. She was on People magazine. So in the book, I have an interview with her, and she talks about there was this one point where she was getting so many compliments. It was a red carpet event. She was getting so many compliments, but the people giving her compliments didn't know that she was actually in the middle of chemotherapy for cancer. They say, what's your secret? What's your secret? And obviously she just kind of didn't tell them and just kind of, you know, kind of laughed it off and just continued on her way. She said she felt like crying, actually, but she kept it together. And, you know, these guys, like, why would you say something like that when you don't even know what entire, you know, this is the society we live in. And she did say she underappreciates, you know, they didn't say it in a malicious way, like, or, you know, they didn't know and then started to say, you know, they actually genuinely just, again, one of those swimmers in a society of just that just is being pumped and pumped and pumped. So even me, I'm sure at some point in the past, prior to working in this field, I would have said it lots of times, complimented people. You don't even know why they may be losing weight, or complimented someone because they gain weight. You don't know why they're gaining weight. You're just constantly making assumptions and judgments on bodies and all sorts of things. I think what this person who's asked this question, I think what they can do is I'm a big believer of good communication in this space. Good quality communication. Say it. Look, I'm inherently a people pleaser. It's actually been a big thing that I've had to work on, having those difficult conversations with people. And the thing is, as you get older in your career as a medic, you're going to have more people underneath you, more people you're supervising, more people you have to, you know, tell them in a very constructive way, you know, you're not doing this right, this is the way to improve, and all sorts of things like that, all those conversations I just do not enjoy. But you may just have to, this person may just have to, and obviously this person's asking the question, but I'm sure there are many other people in their position, they may actually have to say, guys, can we please sit down? And this is the deal from now. To their people that they are able to do that with. Education. They could educate other people, in, you know, in their, you know, people younger than them, or, you know, this person, it could be in their mission to actually spread the message. Because the reality is, if we live by, it's one of my favorite quotes by one of my favorite, he's a gospel rap guy, his name's Lecrae. He says, if we live by people's acceptance, we'll die by their rejection. We can't live our life off the back of what people say about us, because God forbid they say something negative about us and that's it, we crumble and we become, you know, we just fall to bits. So this person also could do some, as we all need to do, I'm not just saying just this person, we all need to do, you know, make sure that we can try our best to stand independently of others' comments about us, or at least not be rocked so much left and right by people's comments about us, which, again, we all, we're human, right? So I'm actually very happy this person asked this question, because ultimately they've asked it for me, for you, for everybody, because we could do with being less impacted in a negative way by what people are saying. But thing is, this is where it becomes quite difficult, because ultimately we're human and we're made for connection and we're made to respond to what people say to us. Like, we're made to love when people, you know, sing our songs, or we're made to, you know, cry if someone says something, you know, that is, you know, we really love, and it's making us feel really emotional in a good way. You know, whatever it happens to be, you know, we're made for, to respond to things. So then to say, if someone tells you something you don't want to hear, to not be able to react to that, that feels almost a bit unnatural. But there's a sweet spot. There's definitely a sweet spot. And some people would call it resilience. I tend not to like that word too much. I tend not to like it too much, because I think it's been bastardized a bit. It's been misused. But yeah, I don't know what the word is, but I think it's being sure-footed enough to withstand some of those, that turbulence which you get out in society.
So you're talking about how, like, you can't swim and expect not to get wet. You can't prevent all comments or most of them. But when you talk about maybe like the people in your inner circle, like close family or friends, are there any strategies or communication techniques that you would suggest when it comes to potentially setting boundaries around comments on body size changes?
If it's someone who the family, again, cultures within families are different. If it's someone that the family will potentially respect, it may be one of those things where you may have to ask a clinician. And we've had to do this with our patients. Patients like, oh my, oh, they just can't stop making comments about my body. You know, there are some cultures, I know for sure, like recently I read some brilliant work where I know in some, you know, minority ethnic groups, you know, okay, you could argue it's the global majority, but in some of these groups of East Asians, Southeast Asians, the women in the house, you know, the aunts, the mums, the grandmas, they notoriously talk about body. Talk about body, always talking about body. Everything's communicated, always talking about body. Oh, this, they make all sorts of body comments. And it might be one of those things where actually it takes an outsider, a doctor or whatever it is. It could be a nurse or whoever, the clinician of some description, to say, can you please not? Because this is taking away from this person's recovery, or taken away from this person as an individual. So it could, that could be one thing to do, get someone else to advocate on your behalf. I think also it could be one of those things where some people don't like verbally mentioning things. It could be just maybe they need to write a letter. Sometimes people take letters more seriously. You put it down on words. You formalize it. you make it seem serious. If you're one of those people who's always joking, or you know, your family, just, you know, it's your family, it's your friends, you know, you say something, they don't ignore her, ignore him, or whatever, ignore them, whatever it happens to be. And if you formalize it, it may not guaranteed, but it may mean that they take these things again a bit more seriously. Unfortunately, what typically happens if family don't listen, sometimes you get people, I feel like, not the need to, but they you know, that distress needs to be shown in some way. And it's not uncommon where you've had people express their distress in a way which is like, oh no, that's really not good for you. That's really not good for you. But my family weren't listening, but the clinicians weren't listening. It's like, no, please don't do that, because that is going to make things worse, you know, that sort of thing. So it's really important that these things happen early. So yeah, I'd recommend doing all this early, trying to communicate with them as early as possible, because the more you ruminate with it, you know, the harder it will become.
Yeah, and it sounds like, you know, you're saying don't be afraid to bring in professional help if you need it, like a doctor or a therapist.
Yeah, absolutely.
How can someone handle triggering body comments without relapsing into disordered behaviors?
Yeah, good question. I don't think that will happen overnight. I think it's a gradual process. And I think there's all sorts of really, really talented therapists that can really get at the meat as to why, at the heart of it, why is it that these comments are so triggering? Why is it that this comment that this person made hit you the way it did? I think part of that, in answer to your question, part of it would be therapy, if necessary. Part of it would be distancing yourself, quite literally distancing yourself from people who just don't get the message, or they're not listening to you, and they just refuse, or maybe they're actually saying it as a way of irritating you. And, you know, it can be like, oh, you know, you should be able to deal with this comment. And they're saying, even though they know you may be struggling with it, you know, there are times to distance yourself from people, but you can't distance yourself. Again, it's funny because, again, this is where it becomes almost oxymoronic. An eating disorder likes to distance itself. So it's a case of, you want to distance yourself from people, but you don't want to do that and shut down all channels of communication with everyone. So it's a case of really knowing when. Again, this is difficult. It sometimes takes an outsider to help you. Is this comment something that I can work through, or is this actually the kind of person that I need to distance myself from? It might not be either or. It may be during a process of being able to do the therapy, you may have to distance yourself from certain people whilst you're doing both, if you see what I mean, at the same time. It's very, very tricky. Very, very tricky. I think ultimately, if there's a restrictive eating disorder like anorexia nervosa, part of the therapy is nutrition. That person needs good quality nutrition on their brain, because on a neuroanatomical level, you know, their prefrontal cortex is shrunk, you know, the reasoning, you know, is not going to be as good, you know, even the places like the amygdala, our center of emotions in our brain, that's overactive. So comments have heightened, you know, hit the brain in a different way. So ultimately, there's certain conditions where you just need nutrition as part of that as well. You need nutrition. And you can't get away from that. You know, there's ultimately, our nerves are layered with fat. Every single nerve of our body has a myelin sheath, which is pure fat. And that helps the conduction of impulses across the brain. That's, you know, if you don't have those, you won't have those conductions as quick. You won't have the messages being sent across the brain quickly enough. So, you know, this is why it's not uncommon for people who are, you know, are starved or malnourished or underweight to have very slow thought processes, because they literally just, their nerves aren't firing as quickly as they should. So that's another thing. You know, you talk about, oh, they triggered me. And then you look and say, okay, this person's acutely unwell. Part of the issue is that you're undernourished. But then it's not always that. So yeah, as you can imagine, you know, you get the other way. You get someone who is, you know, larger bodied in a society, like I've talked to you earlier, in a society which is just purely pushing certain narratives which make people feel very uncomfortable. You know, it works both ways. It is, in answer to your question, it is very, very challenging to get the balance right.
Yeah, well, it sounds like, you know, emotions can be high, malnourished or not. And there's like a fine line to balance between isolating and setting boundaries, because there's a difference there. You need to be very careful, because you're absolutely right. I know from my own lived experience, eating disorders are so isolating. So thank you for sharing that advice. That is very helpful. And before we go, I want to hone in a little bit on something that Taylor said in her question, which was that comments on her body bring up deep feelings of shame. So as a medical doctor, how do you see the topic of body shame come up with eating disorder patients?
Yeah. Often it's intertwined quite literally with the diagnosis. It's often part of the diagnostic criteria. We see that with diagnoses such as bulimia nervosa, which is notoriously a secretive one. You know, no one really knows how many people actually have bulimia nervosa. It's notoriously secretive. People assume it, you have to vomit as well as part of it, but that's not the case. There's all sorts of different ways in which people can counteract nutrition that's come in. People misunderstand what purging actually means, but shame, guilt, these are very strong emotions. People with binge eating disorder often experience this shame, guilt. Not even that. You get people with anorexia nervosa, or even atypical. Basically, across the board, you get even things like ARFID, which isn't to do with body image. ARFID is notoriously not to do with body image, but there's often shame with not being able to eat certain foods or makes as much progress as you would have liked. So we see it a lot. We see it a lot with all the eating disorders. I think it's probably talked about more with the first two I mentioned, so bulimia nervosa and binge eating disorder. I think we talk about it more with those because there is something, oh, and Jessica Wilson, dietitian, amazing. She wrote a bit in the book, Eating Disorders Don't Discriminate, which came out relatively recently. She writes about society and how we're conditioned to feel shame and guilt if we don't eat in a way which is socially acceptable. And it's just fascinating. She's very good with her words. I think shame and guilt is weird because it's very, very, it's relative. Some people be in certain cultures or certain settings and what they're doing generate within them, they don't experience any shame or guilt. Same person somewhere else would experience shame and guilt. So we see it a lot. Often it makes sense when we see it. We're like, interesting. This person comes from that culture and they're doing that. It's like, no wonder they experience shame and guilt. Some other times it's less obvious. Be like, oh, okay, wow, they experience shame and guilt. That's really interesting. And you're trying to unpick as to where that originated from. And it does originate, always originates somewhere. We see it a lot. How do we deal with it? Well, it's part of the treatment of the eating disorder. You need to get to the heart of it. You know, there's not enough psychologists in the world. Art therapists or therapists of all description need to get to the meat of it. You know, in psychiatry, we don't, unfortunately, we don't tend to delve in that much as psychologists do. They kind of keep us in the medico-legal stuff and the medications and all that stuff. And, you know, the psychologists really, I think, have such a fascinating job when it comes to eating disorders care because they go into some deep levels and it can be quite uncomfortable for the individual, but hopefully by the end of it, those feelings of shame and guilt have diminished.
So shame is like a part, it's an integral part of having an eating disorder, and is also addressing it as an integral part of recovery.
Without question. I mean, it's very much in the, like I mentioned, the diagnostic criteria. It's very much part intertwined with the experience of having one. And it, those feelings can start very early, even before anyone's even reached the diagnosis, the point of diagnosis, feeling shame and guilt. And unfortunately, if you don't address those feelings quite early, they can get worse and worse and worse and worse until people are just like riddled with shame and guilt. And, you know, we have to eat quite a lot in this world. And I know eating disorders isn't just about eating and food, but a lot of the shame and guilt stems around food. And there's a lot of meals we have to get through. And that's akin to being completely paralyzed. You know, living your life with that amount of shame and guilt is just not sustainable, which is why it needs addressing urgently in the majority of cases.
Are there any resources that you could suggest to the listener or to Taylor to help with the journey and the process of addressing shame around food and body?
Yeah, there's a few. It would be nice if I could, anyway, look, anyone, regardless of your ethnic heritage, you can enjoy the book. So Sabrina Strings has a fantastic book, Fearing the Black Body. I always think that's a good place to start when it comes to body image. I know it's talking about black bodies in general, but I think she's very good at highlighting the relationship between our psyche and society with bodies. So I think that's a good place to start. And then there's the individual stories. There's, you know, ones like Hunger by Roxane Gay, and you know, there's some really good ones. Is it Stephanie Covington Armstrong, I think their name is. It's Not All Black Girls Know How to Eat, I think it's called.
It sounds familiar. And I'll look all these up and I'll like put the links in.
They're coming to me now. There's some really, really good ones. I recommend even the book by, you know, You Are Not a Before Picture by Alex Light. There's some really good ones. I'm just thinking of Body Positive Power by Megan Jane Crabb. You know, there's some really good ones out there. I think I'm just trying to think of the ones which are more body image, you know, shame and stigma related. Obviously, there's some like textbooks and stuff, but that's not really not remotely interesting. Or there's film, TV, and you know, everything now on Netflix. I don't know whether they do that in the US, whether it's come out there.
On what TV?
Netflix, Everything Now is called.
I've not heard of that. What is that?
Everything Now, yeah. It's someone with this story, basically, of it's quite humorous, but still quite serious, obviously, about someone with an eating disorder, and they go through the story of it. And the director is actually Thandie Wayne Newton's daughter, I think. Everything Now, really, probably one of the most accurate depictions, I think, of having an eating disorder. And it's quite nice having the lady being, you know, a person of colour. I think it adds another layer to the story. Not that it's any more important because she's a person of colour, but I think it's nice to get a different perspective because, you know, because sometimes we don't get enough of it.
Yeah, I had not heard of that. I'm excited to hear about that. That's cool.
Yeah. Really well, good. Worth a watch. Worth a watch, totally.
So to end this episode, I would love it if we could send off Taylor and all the listeners with this amazing poem that you recently shared. I saw Dr. Chuck share this on his Instagram and it's just so beautiful. Would you be comfortable to read the poem?
Yeah, totally.
It's called A Poem About Bodies. Go ahead.
In a world where beauty is defined by society's grace, we find ourselves entangled in a struggle with body image and race, where standards dictate worth and self-acceptance is displaced. It's time to break free from this suffocating embrace. We're taught to compare ourselves to an ideal, a template that's elusive, impossible to feel. But let me tell you, my brothers and sisters, it's time to reveal the magnificence within us that no one can steal. The media portrays an illusion, an unrealistic display, promoting the notion that only one shade can hold sway. But look around and you'll see a spectrum at play, a kaleidoscope of colours weaving our own way. From ebony to ivory, every hue holds a story of resilient strength and unyielding glory. Each scar, each stretch mark, every contour, a testimony of the battles we fought, our individual journey. The mirror may reflect our physical frame, but true beauty lies in our heart's flame. Embrace your roots, your heritage, your name, for unity and diversity is the ultimate aim. Let's shatter the stereotypes, defy what they expect, rise above prejudice, and never disconnect. Our bodies are art, and we will not neglect to love and respect ourselves, and others will protect. Body image and race, a duo, will redefine. No longer confined to boxes, will break the line. In unity we'll stand, hand in hand, combined, for a future where self-love and acceptance intertwine. So let's rewrite the narrative, empower and inspire. Celebrate each other. Let's love, fuel the fire. Because in this journey, there's no room for a liar. We'll reclaim our bodies and race, reach higher and higher. Remember, my friends, our worth knows no bounds. In the face of adversity, our strength resounds. We're beautifully unique, a symphony of sounds. Let's embrace body image and race. Together, we're profound.
I'm clapping. That's beautiful. That's an amazing poem. What was the inspiration behind writing that?
Yeah, I do know what it was. One of my friends does a lot of poetry and I'm kind of in the middle of a very interesting project, which I can't really say much about. But essentially, I thought, you know what, let's just throw some words on the page and and let's see. But yeah, no, honestly, I think in general, just more creative ways of highlighting an issue, I think is really, really needed. And so, yeah, any of your listeners, you know, if they have any interesting ways of just getting information out there or they have lived experience, just share it. If you feel able to, share it, be creative, you know, that you never know who you're going to impact.
Yeah. Well, I think the poem you wrote is very impactful, very powerful messages. I'm always impressed when someone can rhyme and like make sense and make it good. Yeah. So you nailed that. And thank you again for sharing it. You are a medical doctor, psychiatrist, poet extraordinaire. Thank you once again for being here. Really appreciate your time, Dr. Chucks.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, my warrior friend, thank you for having the discipline to listen in. If you found this episode helpful and know somebody in recovery who could benefit from its inspiring message, please share this show with them. It would mean the world to us at Recovery Warriors if we can get our cause out to more people struggling with an eating disorder. So if what you heard today was helpful, share the show with another warrior or anyone on your treatment team. You can do this directly from your podcast player or send them over to recoverywarriors.com. We have a goldmine of free resources there for all stages of recovery. And until the next episode, may compassion light the path you are on and courage keep you on it. You totally got this, warrior.